Bhaktivrinda-kita, Gaur Premanande. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Vishnu Prabhupada. Maham Vishnu Prabhupada. Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yujapada Kamalam Sri Guru Vaishnavascha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sagana Raghunatam Vitam Samsachitam Sadvaitam Sadvadutam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sagana Lalita Sri Vishakam Vitam Om Namo Bhagavate
Vijayaya,
for the victory and increasing prestige.
and
Translation of Prabhupada by Srila Prabhupada.
Yeah.
When does the class end?
I was told 8:30.
8:30? 8:30-ish?
8:15.
8:15?
Between 8:15
and 8:30.
Between 8:15 and 8:30.
Which, who do I listen to?
Let's put it this way. Breakfast is supposed to start at 8:30, so...
Oh, okay.
So that's what we're talking about.
Everybody wants to stay
in. Okay. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. O Lord Brahma, your position within this universe is certainly most auspicious for everyone, especially the cows and Brahmanas. Brahminical culture and the protection of cows can be increasingly glorified, and thus all kinds of material happiness, opulence, and good fortune will automatically increase. But unfortunately, if your own Kashyapu occupies your seat, everything will be lost. In this verse, the words Dvija, Gavam, Parameshtyam indicate the most exalted position of the Brahmanas, Brahminical culture, and the cows. In Vedic culture, the welfare of the cows and the welfare of the Brahmanas are essential. Without a proper arrangement for developing Brahminical culture and protecting cows, all the affairs of administration will go to hell. And the process of administration generally means government. Being afraid that Hiranyakashipu would occupy the post of Brahma, all the demigods are extremely disturbed. Hiranyakashipu was a well-known demon, and the demigods knew that if demons and rakshasas were to occupy the supreme post, Brahminical culture and protection of cows would come to an end. And of course, that's actually what happened. Even though Hiranyakashipu didn't become Lord Brahma, he still did whatever he could to destroy Brahminical culture and cow protection. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita 5:29, the original proprietor of everything is Lord Krishna, Dharmayatava Samsara Lokameshwara. The Lord, therefore, knows particularly well how to develop the material condition of the living entities within this material world. In every universe, there is one Brahma engaged on behalf of Lord Krishna, as confirmed in Srimad Bhagavatam, Tenyam, Brahma, Radhaya, Kaviya. The principal creator in each Brahmanda is Lord Brahma, who imparts Vedic knowledge to his disciples and sons. On every planet, the king or supreme controller must be a representative of Brahma. Therefore, if a rakshasa or demon is situated in Brahma's post, then the entire arrangement of the universe, especially the protection of the Brahminical culture and cows, will be ruined. All the demigods anticipated this danger, and therefore they went to request Lord Brahma to take immediate steps to thwart Hiranyakashipu's plans, so they wanted to be proactive. In the beginning of creation, Lord Brahma was attacked by two demons, Madhu and Kaitalya, but Krishna saved him. Therefore, Krishna is addressed as Madhu Kaitalya Hunter. Now again, Hiranyakashipu was trying to replace Brahma. The material world is so situated that even the position of Lord Brahma, not to speak of ordinary living entities, is sometimes a danger. Nonetheless, until the time of Hiranyakashipu, no one had tried to replace Lord Brahma. Hiranyakashipu, however, was such a great demon that he maintained his ambition. The word bhujyai means for increasing opulence, and the word shreisei refers to ultimately returning home, back to Godhead. Now here Srila Prabhupada is going to say something quite interesting and not what we usually preach. In spiritual advancement, one's material position improves at the same time that the path of liberation becomes clear and one is free from material bondage. If one is situated in an opulent position in spiritual advancement, his opulence never decreases. Therefore, such a spiritual benediction is called bhuti or vibhuti. Krishna confirms this in Bhagavad Gita 10:41, yadya vibhuti mat sattvam, mama tejo visar sambhavam. If a devotee advances in spiritual consciousness and thus becomes materially opulent also, his position is a special gift from the Lord. So usually we talk about how when Krishna really likes you, he takes everything away, right? So I have one good friend who was born and raised in the Hare Krishna movement who came to talk to me a few months ago, and she said, "Ramila, I don't think Krishna loves me." I said, "Why is that?" She says, "I've never had any problems in my life." She says, "I have a nice family, good education, good health, I have everything I need, you know, a material, comfortable situation. Most of my friends have gone through some kind of trouble. Does this mean Krishna doesn't love me?" So, here, Prabhupada said that if you have both spiritual consciousness and material opulence, that is a special gift from the Lord. Such opulence is never to be considered material. So it may look material, but it's not. At the present, especially on this planet Earth, the influence of Lord Brahma has decreased considerably. So especially on this Earth. So my understanding is that the higher planets don't necessarily go through some sort of Kali Yuga, you know, have cow slaughter going on, etc., etc. And the representatives of Hiranyakashipu, the Rakshasas and the demons, have taken charge. Therefore, there is no protection of Brahminical culture and cows, which are the basic prerequisites for all kinds of good fortune. This age is very dangerous because society is being managed by demons and Rakshasas. Tavasan Pujanavam, Paraneshyam Jagatpate, Bhavayam Shreyasam Vijay, Shreemaya Vijayaya Ja. O Lord Brahma, your position within this universe is certainly most auspicious for everyone, especially the cows and Brahmanas. Brahminical culture and the protection of cows can be increasingly glorified, and thus all kinds of material happiness, opulence, and good fortune will automatically increase. But unfortunately, if Hiranyakashipu occupies your seat, everything will be lost. Prabhupada talks here about Bhujyai and Shreyasai. Bhujyai meaning material opulence, and Shreyasai meaning ultimate fortune. We have Prayas and Shreyas. Prayas is immediate happiness, and Shreyas is ultimate happiness. I always remember the difference because Prayas begins with a P, like play, and Prabhupada often compares Prayas and Shreyas to a child playing and a child going to school. So playing gives immediate happiness and going to school gives long-term happiness. So here the long-term happiness Srila Prabhupada is identifying as ultimately returning home back to Godhead. So a society where there is Shreyas, where everybody goes back home back to Godhead, and where there's Bhujya, where there's material happiness, material opulence, prosperity, Vijaya, Shema. Shema means things are maintained, they're protected. So we find throughout the Shastra and throughout Srila Prabhupada's books that if you have a Krishna-conscious society, you also have a materially opulent society. Sometimes devotees wish for some material catastrophe, thinking that, well, if there's some material catastrophe, people will become more Krishna-conscious. But we see generally in the Shastra that material prosperity and Krishna consciousness are what goes together. When people are Krishna conscious, they live a prosperous life. And Krishna wants both. Krishna wants his parts and parcels to be happy on all levels. I mean, a normal parent who's a devotee also wants their children to eat and have nice clothes and get a good education and have some toys to play with. It's not that they say, "Well, we just want you to chant Hare Krishna and we're just going to feed you, you know, some old rice to eat and have you sleep." So Krishna is much better even than an ordinary parent. And he wants to take care of his parts and parcels, even his rebellious parts and parcels, even his criminal parts and parcels, on all levels. He doesn't want any of the living entities to suffer. I was just hearing Prabhupada say that in class yesterday. That Krishna doesn't want any of his parts and parcels to suffer. So how do we get this situation where there's material prosperity? By the way, this means real prosperity. It means that you're eating real food and you're breathing clean air and you're drinking clean water and you don't have a lot of anxieties about crime and so forth and so on. It doesn't mean that everybody has the latest electronic gizmo. Not that we're opposed to electronic gizmos, but that's not the definition of prosperity. Prosperity is not that you eat chemical food and, you know, you can communicate with someone on the other side of the world in an instant. But prosperity means that there's health. Just recently I stayed at the home of some devotees outside Washington, D.C. And I felt, I was there for about a week, and I felt rejuvenated on all levels, spiritually, physically, mentally, emotionally. I had just finished a very intense preaching tour, and they bought all organic food, and the cooking was really first class, and it had installed deities that they worshipped at a temple standard, and the whole atmosphere was very nice. I just felt very healthy in every respect. So a Krishna conscious society is like that. It's healthy on every level of health. So how does one get there? And here it's described by Brahminical culture and cow protection, which means Brahminical culture means what? Sattva-guna. We're talking about the mode of goodness. So this whole discussion in Bhagavatam is very much related to the question asked that if God is neutral, why do the devotees prosper and the demons get vanquished? Of course, the demons may prosper for a little while, like Hiranyakashipu is going to prosper for a very little while, actually, because he prospers from the birth of Prahlad until Prahlad's fine, 5 years. But generally, why do the devotees prosper? And the answer is given by Shukadeva Goswami, that Krishna is neutral, but everything favors the mode of goodness. If you think, well, what does that mean? So the word sattva means both good, and it also means what? What does sattva mean?
Truth.
What is true? What is real? So basically when we're saying that everything favors sattva, we're saying if you use things in the way that they're designed, they work better. Basically what it's saying. You know, besides talking about being for a week in a situation where I felt very healthy, that's because everything in the environment was in sync with the way that this body and mind and me are designed to function. You know, if I decide I'm going to eat the napkin instead of drinking the water, then I won't feel good. And that's not the fault of the napkin. It's just that my body isn't designed to eat napkins. It's not how it's engineered. So we talk about Krishna being the absolute truth, satyam param dhimi. One should meditate on the absolute truth. Krishna is absolutely true. And if you work in harmony with what's true, then you're happy. A pretty simple concept. Okay? You know, if you use a knife to cut vegetables, then you're happy. If you use a knife to cut your fingers, you're not. It's a very simple thing. So what is the truth? The truth is that that also means eternal. What's true is always eternal, and what's true is I am an eternal spiritual being, and what's my function is to give in love. And we see that whenever we're giving in a loving way, not in a calculated business way, but whenever we're giving in a loving way, we become happy. And whenever we're trying to take, we become unhappy. I mean, even a materialist can understand this, that they're much happier by giving a present to their friends or throwing a party for their friends or taking care of someone they love than doing something selfishly. And even Krishna likes to give. When we say Krishna is a supreme enjoyer, Prabhupada's quoting your book, you're going to tell us something. It doesn't mean that Krishna is just a taker. Krishna is a giver. The word here is kshema, which reminds me of yoga kshema vahamaham, and near yoga kshema adhagam, the second chapter. Krishna says, don't worry about yoga kshema. Don't worry about getting things. Yoga means to connect, and kshema to protect things. Adhagam, be established in the self. How can you do that? Because yoga kshema vahamaham, I'll give you everything. And Krishna gives everything, even to the demons, even to those who hate them. I don't do that. When people hate me, I don't give them anything. I don't even give them my time or attention if I can help. Right? We give nice things to people who hate us and try to hurt us, and generally not. But Krishna does. Krishna gives everything, even to demons. Krishna gives, I mean, even really, really low demons. I'm talking about here, Hiranyakashipu, but, you know, I was just visiting one of my relatives yesterday, and she was saying that at one point they had a flea infestation, and they were all covered with fleas in their house. But Krishna feeds the fleas. You know, you get a flea body, you have to be pretty nasty. Just imagine, to get a mosquito body or a flea body or a tick body, you have to have a mentality that I want to live on the blood of others and spread disease. You know, what kind of mood would you have to have? You know, poison ivy plant, touching me, they'll settle for a month. And Krishna feeds them. You know, he gives them food, he gives them water, he gives them sunshine. Krishna doesn't say, okay, if you're really envious and nasty, then you're finished. So Krishna's also a giver. Krishna likes to give as the story progresses and Nisingadeva appears. Nisingadeva says to Prahlada, it is my pastime to give benedictions. So that is the mood of actually the Lord gives so many millions and millions and millions of times over what we can give. When the jiva gives himself completely to Krishna gives himself completely to the jiva. As Lord Prabhupada says, the Lord takes whatever form the devotee desires to worship in. So everyone tries to do this with other jivas. When people marry, the two partners are thinking that my spouse will be exactly what I want them to be. Or if they're not now, they'll become that way through my various manipulations. You know, or my children will become exactly what I want them to be. I've often thought having children is so much riskier than marriage. At least marriage, you can like look at the horoscope. But kids, you never watch them again. And there you are. But people are thinking, well, I'm going to mold my child in a particular way and make them whatever. It doesn't always work out that way. So the other people in our lives don't become, but Krishna becomes. Krishna actually takes whatever mood, whatever form the devotee desires. So Krishna is the ultimate giver. He's not the supreme enjoyer the way Hiranyakashipu tries to become the supreme enjoyer. Hiranyakashipu tries to become a supreme enjoyer by everybody serve me and do what I say. And we find later on he gets angry at the demigods without reason. You ever met anybody like that? Get angry at others without reason. Maybe you've done that sometimes. So he wasn't a very happy person, and he was always intoxicated. Two signs that someone's miserable. They're always intoxicated, they get angry at others without cause. So Krishna's not that kind of enjoyer. He's not a dictator. He's a giver. He wants to enjoy with the living entities. So this is, we call this our Sanatana Dharma, to serve. This is the essence of truth. This is the essence of goodness, is giving, selflessness. And the more one does this, the more one is happy. So the persons who in society who are most understanding and living by this principle are called Brahmins. And Prabhupada uses this term, Brahminical culture, a lot. And what's very interesting is that Srila Prabhupada, I find it interesting, is that Srila Prabhupada talks about how Kshatriyas have to respect and support and be part of Brahminical culture. And that's really what Prabhupada's talking about extensively in this purport, that the administrators of the universe, Lord Brahma, who's of course, in one sense, Brahma's not a Kshatriya, he's really Brahma. Although he's the personification of the mode of passion, he's the chief of the Brahmanas in the universe. This is kind of an interesting position. But someone who's ruling things, they're generally in the mode of passion. Creation is in the mode of passion. But they have to respect the mythical culture. And sometimes they feel proper to talk about Kshatriyas being part of the mythical culture. What does that mean? Wouldn't Kshatriyas be part of their Kshatriya culture? And Kshatriya culture is different. Brahminical culture, isn't it? Right? Different mentality. Different way of looking at the world. So why is it so important that you have some Brahminical culture in order to have both spiritual accomplishments, Shreyas, and material opulence, Bhujaya? So let's look for a minute at the modes of material nature. So it's really interesting, if you read carefully chapter 17 and 18 of Bhagavad Gita, and you start seeing the descriptions of the modes of nature. So you'll see that in the mode of goodness, you're following the shastras, you're doing everything right, you're doing it out of duty, you're doing it out of purification. In the mode of passion, what's described as one's mentality. One's mentality becomes honor, prestige, material enjoyment. That's what's motivating a person in passion. So even though the epitome of the passionate person, the king, as Prabhupada said, if you die in the mode of passion, you become a king or a rich man, is a righteous person, And this is hard for us to understand because, like Robin says, now everything is run by demons. So when we hear that the chief political person in a society is a righteous person, we don't really get that. It doesn't compute with us. Our historical memory of kings is of Europe in the Middle Ages, and they certainly were not righteous people. So, you know, the king is a righteous person. And we tend to think that if you're a political leader, that king must be exploiting all the citizens. Well, the kings we read about in Bhagavatam, Bhagavatam is full of kings, isn't it? Right? Gopi Purandara once said to me, you know, if the Bhagavatam was full of Brahmanas, it would just be boring. They just go to the forest, they meditate, they milk the cows, they stand the shastras, go to the sakyas, you know, they're fighting battles and all these things. So it's full of the stories of these kings, but they were righteous. And we find even the non-devotee kings, like Jarasandha, he had this principle of giving to Brahmanas and following the Vedas. Now, Karna, I have to give in charity, but their motive for doing all these things was wrong. Their reason for doing them. I'm going to do something just like Krishna told Jarasandha. I was saying, this is quite humorous. You know, if you give your body to the Brahmanas, you'll be famous after death. You ever thought about being famous after death? I wouldn't be surprised if many of us in this room, in some lifetime, have done something that people still remember us for. Do you care? I mean, if you could look in the encyclopedia and you could, somebody could, you know, really in astrology, really have faith in using the Greek or whatever, said, hey, that entry is about you 3 lifetimes ago, would it matter? You know, this idea that I'm going to be famous after death, I'm going to be a new body, I don't even know about it, I don't even care. You know, why would it matter? So silly. But these sutras, they're really motivated by this kind of thing. You know, I want to be famous, I want everyone to like me. I want everyone to think well of me. I want status in society. So although they're righteous, although they're following the Shastra, they're doing it for the wrong reason. Therefore, the motor passion is very, very dangerous. Because if you're doing things for the wrong reason, you may be tempted to do the wrong things. And in fact, that happens to the subjects, just like Jarasandha ended up kidnapping all those kings. You end up getting pulled down by the wind of ignorance, which engages you in sinful activities. Therefore, the only way to keep the political leaders on a platform where they'll really produce peace and prosperity and spiritual life in the society is if they're following the Brahmas. It's the only way. Because the temptation, the mode of passion is in the middle. The temptation for someone in the mode of passion, because they're the quintessential materialist, somebody in the mode of passion, is, well, maybe I can get what I want by doing something simple. Maybe that'll be fast. And we see the people in mixed passion ignorance, the vicious, that it's really hard for them to be honest, isn't it? There's a tendency, much stronger tendency than the kshatriyas to be dishonest. Therefore, the vicious need to be controlled by the kshatriyas. Because vaishyas don't care so much about fame and prestige. They care about
money.
They care about profit. And the shudras, who are governed by ignorance, they don't even care about profit. What do they care about?
Sounds good.
That's just give me some pleasure right now. When we were driving here from Irvine yesterday, my son was saying to me, says, you know, I know a lot of people, they get a paycheck and they immediately spend all of it. And then they don't have anything. They got to go begging from their friends. Such people don't even care about profit. We used to be able to sell a lot of books to people like that. Yeah. Get them on their payday. No, they'll give you all the money for the books, right? And you get them the next Monday, they were broke. So, but those in the mode of goodness, they're not going to give up the search for truth, for immediate sense gratification, or for profit, or for prestige. So if such people are leading the society, they're going to push those kshatriyas to act properly. And you know, if you keep acting properly, it will change your mentality. Someone in the mode of passion is like, they have what the psychologists call cognitive dissonance. They're doing righteous things, but for the wrong reason. It's hard to stay in that kind of platform. And if there's no Brahmanas, they'll fall. And we're seeing that, you know, societies are more and more, as Brahma says, to Rakshasas, to people in mode of ignorance. So Brahminical culture is essential. There has to be the heroes in society, the leaders in society, have to be people whose main business is truth. They want truth. They'll sacrifice their prestige, they'll sacrifice profit, they'll sacrifice sense gratification for truth. And they're following the shastras for purification. Of course, higher than that, higher than those in suffering are those in transcendence who are following the scriptures not for purification but for love, for service, for going, as Prabhupada says here, back to home, back to God. And why the cows? So among the animals, the cows are the epitome of goodness, giving it, the same principle again of giving it. That physiologically they produce so much more milk than their own offspring need, and every part of their body is useful for human society. Every part of their body is pure. And Prabhupada often talks about how drinking milk nourishes the brain, so the brain is 67% fat. Prabhupada says the most important part of the milk is the fat. So what kind of fat you eat determines what kind of brain that you have. So these two, the humans who are in Satvagun and the animals who are in Satvagun, and the opposite situation is chaos. And everything quickly comes to the mode of ignorance, where people are not just materialists, but all they're concerned about is immediate pleasure, doesn't matter how I get it. Who cares for the scriptures? Educate people that all those scriptures are something antiquated that primitive people believed in when they didn't know about science. Now that we know about science, we know it's much more logical to say that cars drive themselves and that they have tires. Right? Only childish people think that there's actually drivers in cars. So this is the condition of our modern society. So in order to have a sane society, there has to be leaders who are influenced by the mode of goodness, and then we'll have material and spiritual prosperity. So we in ISKCON, we can think of ourselves in two ways. So I love your sign, International Society for Krishna Consciousness. And I was thinking sometimes it seems like that. But either we can get into the management of the society or we can get into Krishna consciousness. But sometimes we think it's hard to get into both. But here Prabhupada's talking about being into both. Managing a society worldwide, universe-wide, and being Krishna conscious. So one way we can think about ISKCON is that ISKCON is meant to be a society of Brahmins. That there aren't supposed to be really Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Shudras in ISKCON. That would make the definition of ISKCON small, which, by the way, I'm not convinced is necessarily a bad thing. I'm really meditating on this a lot because I teach ISKCON history and sociology of religions, which are used to be ISKCON sociology, Bhakti Antikam. And one of the things that we look at is, you know, where is the place of ISKCON in Mahaprabhu's movement as Krishna consciousness spreads all over the world? And would we really have the GPC chairman be the world emperor? Is that our vision? You know, is our vision that ISKCON itself would manage all the political systems? You know, when I brought this up to any GPC person, they always say, no way. And then I'm thinking, well, maybe the official ISKCON should be just the society and just the worship and the education aspect, just the political aspect, just training the leaders of society. And then having those who are Kshatriya, Vaishya, and Shudra oriented go and build the society under the guidance of ISKCON. So that's one vision. And also we can say, well, maybe ISKCON itself is meant to become this complete society with Brahma, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Shudras. So if that's the case, and maybe that's supposed to be the case in at least a few model places, I'm not sure, then one thing we need to do is activate Kshatriyas. So when I joined the Hare Krishna movement, if you were Brahminically inclined or Shudra inclined, you had a place in the Hare Krishna movement. We wanted your service, and you were contributing to Mahaprabhu's movement. Of course, I was once in one temple where they didn't activate any Shudras, and the walls were falling apart. And then, you know, if you were Vaishya inclined or Kshatriya inclined, you were definitely an admirer, useless. Then sometime, I think maybe in the 90s,
we decided we needed the vicious. We weren't going to make it without the vicious, and we started encouraging people who have that mood. Yes, you can be a devotee through your inclination, and you can contribute to Mahaprabhu's movement, but I see we still haven't quite done that with the Satras. We find few people who are properly situated as the Satras in this time. And we're not quite sure where they fit, because the Satras' main business, as described here, is to take care of the social welfare of the citizens, to make sure that there are schools, to make sure there's medical care, to make sure that there's water, that there's electricity, and things like that. So I've been meditating on this a lot because I work on the Devotee Care Committee for the GBC. So these are the sort of things that we need to consider. You know, what is our place in this time? But indisputably, whatever vision we want to have, we definitely are meant to provide a brahminical basis for society at large. Now I'm going to say right now that that's going to be a big challenge. Because formerly, in Bhagavatam times, there was a big reason why the Kshatriyas listened to the Brahmins. Anybody have any idea why the Kshatriyas listened to the Brahmins? And it wasn't just because they were trained to do so. Yes, their powers. So Vishwamitra found this out when he stopped at Vasistha's ashram, and Vasistha had this kamadhenu. It produced everything for all of Vishwamitra's army. Vishwamitra thought, I want that. And he tried to steal the cow. And the cow cried to Vasistha, help me. And Vasistha said, I'm a Brahmana, what am I supposed to do? You'll have to protect yourself. And the cow produced armies, which defeated Vishwamitra. And Vishwamitra was throwing all his weapons at Vasistha. Vasistha just with his Brahmin staff was, you know, nullifying all of them. I'm sure that's where all of our present stories about wizards and stuff happen. And Vishwamitra said, hey, this guy's got more power than I have. And he decided, Vishwamitra decided to become a Brahmana, which he did. He became a Brahmana, and then he became a Maharshi, and then he became a Brahmarshi. But the Kshatriyas were actually afraid of the Brahmanas. You know, if a Brahmana said, become a frog, you became a frog. And the Kshatriyas understood power. You know, something that they got. Something that made sense to them. And the Brahmanas had power that they just didn't have. So I don't think that, at least in this generation, that we're going to see Brahmanas like that. I don't know, maybe our great-great-grandchildren. And we are having some unusual children and grandchildren being born into the Hare Krishna movement. Some of them have mystic yoga powers and all kinds of interesting things. But generally speaking, we don't have that. You know? Most of us, even if we're minimally inclined, we still have as much Kali in the bodies as anybody else. So that's going to be difficult. Plus, we don't have a general society that's pushing Brahminical culture. We have a general society that's pushing Shudra culture. People who are elevated are the Shudras. They're the heroes, the entertainers, the athletes. Right? In fact, if you do something really sinful and get away with it, you're a hero in modern society. So it's definitely going to be very difficult. But still, we have faith that Mahaprabhu, just by meditating on the lotus feet of Mahaprabhu, even those things that are very difficult become easy. And then somehow Mahaprabhu is going to reestablish the medical culture, and somehow or other, we have been defeated to do that, which Prabhupada describes as something like the monkeys defeating Ravana. That Ravana had big modern weapons, and the monkeys had some stones and pieces of wood. So sometimes we feel like that, isn't it? You know, the Rakshasas have control of the media, they have control of the money, and we're just going out with a few books and a few instruments. But that's what we're meant to do in society. And we're meant to, of course, have basically Brahminical guidance in ISKCON itself. So if we want to establish a society of material and spiritual opulence, we need to cultivate the mode of goodness. Now, even if we think we're not going to do that, well, I'm not going to become a leader, well, I can't change society. If we want to be happy in our own lives also, we have to be in goodness. We have to be in harmony with the truth. I really like the Krishna book in Rasa where Prabhupada says the whole world is full of Krishna's singing. And he says, Krishna is dancing and all the living entities are dancing, but some living entities are dancing in harmony with Krishna and some are not. So my daughter's a Bharatanatyam teacher. She's arranged many dance dramas for festivals, and you have a group of people dancing in sync. It's very beautiful. But if each person thinks, well, I'm going to do my own dance. And not only is it distasteful for the audience, but it's distasteful for the dancers. So this world, it's actually, there's singing and dancing. Krishna's singing and dancing is going on everywhere. And if we want to be happy here, even in our own life, even if we think I can't change the world, although I don't know, even though I'm getting older, I still think I can change the world sometimes. When I was young in Krishna consciousness, I thought I could change the world in about 5 minutes. But at least I can change my world. At least I can do that. And one should have a life in harmony with Krishna. What one says, what one eats, what one listens, what one wears, everything. Is this in harmony? Is this in harmony? Am I singing with Krishna, or am I singing out of harmony with Krishna? Am I dancing with Krishna, or am I dancing out of harmony with Krishna? Am I responding? Right? A dance, the Prabhupada says, all living entities are also dancing. It's interesting. He said, all living entities are also dancing, but some are dancing in accord with Krishna and some not. Am I responding rightly? And the Prabhupada says that he said, some are responding rightly. If Prabhupada Swami was here, he could tell us the exact words. Some are responding rightly to the dancing of Krishna. So that's true for all of us. That's true, Prabhupada said, for all living entities. Please don't think that's only true for liberated souls or gopis, that they can respond rightly to the dancing of Krishna. It's true for all of us. How is Krishna leading in my life? What is Krishna revealing to me? How does Krishna want me to behave? Am I working in harmony with that? Am I working with the truth? And then I'm going to feel healthy on every level. As it says in Bhagavad Gita, all of the gates of one's body become illuminated by knowledge. And that's just material stuff. What to speak of spiritual. It's wonderful. I thought of it this morning when it was too late to look up the reference. I can't remember exactly where it is. But Prabhupada says that some of us, for some people, Krishna is giving direct dictation, and for some, they can't hear it all. So Bhagavatam. And Prabhupada said it depends on our receptivity. To whatever extent we're in the mode of goodness, to that extent we can actually see and hear Krishna around us. So thank you very much. We have just a few minutes before we're serving breakfast. Anybody has questions, comments, additions, subtractions, chastities, please?
Yes.
I was trying to...
Mike is coming.
Oh, Mike is coming.
Maybe I didn't understand your class so well, but I was thinking when you said your daughter teaches Bharatanatyam and how they dance. So I was thinking that, you know, when I joined, it was always, like we understood that we're trying to train to become brahmanas, but then there was always that concept of yukta vairagya, that you, whatever tendency that you have, you know, offer it to Krishna. Because, you know, none of us are really pure. You know, we may have Vaishya tendencies, or we may have Kshatriya tendencies, or some have inimical tendencies, but then if you just engage in Krishna's service, then it's transcendental. It's above that.
Yes.
So, is that, I mean...
That was a point I had that I didn't think I had time to cover.
Oh.
So I'm glad you brought that up. So I was thinking of it in two ways. First of all, somebody who is actually a Vaishnava, even though they may be acting in another way, they're not influenced by that mode. They're using it, but they're not influenced by it. Just like the mod to create, he has to use the mode of passion. So in order to do certain activities, you have to use that mode. But you don't become under the influence of it. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Also, I really like... in chapter 13 of the Bhagavatam, which is the last chapter that Srila Prabhupada gave us before he left this world, when Lord Brahma sees all the Vishnu forms, and surrounding each Vishnu form are all living entities, also dancing. Dancing is also. And they're all serving Krishna according to their respective abilities. So Sanatana Goswami comments there that those who are pure, they're serving according to their particular propensity of love. Those who are impure are serving to their according to their particular bodily and mental nature. But we often think, I often hear devotees think, that surrender means to do something that's not my nature. That if I like what I'm doing, I'm not surrendered. But that again is seeing Krishna as some kind of cruel dictator that wants everybody to be miserable. Also, that's not really surrender, because then I'm not surrendering me, I'm surrendering something false. It's like if I have a relationship with someone and I'm not being myself, and later on they find out what I really like, they're not going to be very happy. So Krishna wants an authentic relationship. So whatever propensities I have, and materially all of our propensities have a downside. You will not find any material propensity. Krishna says that all activities have some fault, like smoke is covering fire. So all of our propensities have a downside. But anyway, best use of a bad bargain. Whatever propensities you have, use that for Krishna. Use even the false stuff for Krishna. Yes.
Thank you, Mother. Thank you for a very educational class. Is this a new one? I'm taking it off.
It's not.
Thank you for a very educational class, Mother. And you mentioned that nowadays, even those of us who are acting in the propensity of Brahmana still have Kali bodies just like anyone else. And we know that in the Vaisnava standard of the Bhagavatam that great Brahmanas who perform austerities in the forest and whatnot to develop their tejas, even in a material sense.
Mm.
So how is it that, what is the best way for us in ISKCON here to develop their tejas? What is the best austerity for us to develop their tejas?
You know, the Brihad Vrata is the great vow.
I'm working on it.
You know what that is?
Brahmacharya.
Yeah. That's the main way you develop tejas, even physiologically. Tejas are power comes from ojas. Ojas is what's physiologically produced if you're acting, if you're actually self, not just technically in your mind is going everywhere. Or if you're a nice rasa.
Thank you again for a very enlightening class. My question is that
we place so much emphasis on the rabbinical culture within ISKCON. And when we talk about Vaishyas, we generally talk about, you know, context of our modern culture of, you know, things like, you know, modern business and, you know, profit, things like that. But it seems to me that, in some sense, Vaishya is, you know, as important, if not more important in some ways, than rabbinical culture, in the sense that today everything is based on industry. And, you know, everything, even the farms today, you know, the whole, it's topsy-turvy now. Most of the farms are produced, the things that grow are produced by agribusiness. And, you know, the actual Vaishya who's protecting the cows and who's, you know, growing, you know, vegetables when things are, you know, based on simple living like that. It seems like that's very, very important and maybe not stressed enough within ISKCON. We talk a lot about balance. I don't know if you have anything to say.
I do. I wish I had a marker for the eraser. And then I'd draw you a nice diagram. All right, so can you try to make a mental diagram? So mentally picture concentric circles. You've got a big circle, and then circles inside of it. So the brahmanas protect what? What are the brahmanas protecting?
Knowledge.
And truth. What are the kshatriyas protecting? People. What are the vaishyas protecting? Animals and?
Reduction.
Bigger. Where does money come from? All money comes from natural resources. So the Vaishyas are protecting the natural resources and the animals. What are the Shudras protecting? The arts and the skills, the trades. Everybody's protecting something for Krishna. So the Shudras are supposed to make sure that music, dance, cloth making, furniture making, vehicle making, everything is done in a way that nourishes people spiritually and is used to further spiritual consciousness and also people's psychological health. If you think about Shudras, that they can take real pride in what they're doing. They're making a beautiful pot, they're making a dhoti, they're painting a picture, they're very skilled in their art. They keep these skills and these crafts, they protect them. And they protect them in the sense of having them be something that's psychologically satisfying, and also protecting them that they're used to elevate people. That they're things of material and spiritual beauty and satisfaction. Then the Vaishyas are supposed to protect the natural resources. The Vaishyas are supposed to generate real wealth, not numbers on a screen, where one day you have $100,000 and the next day you only have $50,000, although nothing's happened. There's just, you know, it's imaginary wealth. It's not real, it's false. So Vaishyas are supposed to, just like the Sutras, are supposed to produce real objects of beauty and permanence, but longevity, not something planned obsolescence, something that has quality to it, something that elevates you. The Vaishyas are supposed to produce real wealth, and real wealth comes from natural resources. And they're supposed to protect the natural resources so that you can continue to get wealth from the natural resources for generations after generations. They're supposed to protect the animals. And each is supposed to take some pride in it. And they're supposed to protect the earth. Who is the earth? The earth is the wife of God. They're supposed to be protecting the earth as the wife of God and the animals as the pets of the world for the glory of Krishna. And the kshatriyas are supposed to be protecting the people. They're supposed to make sure the people have good roads and water and schools and medical care and everything that they need so that they can be peaceful and give them spiritual instruction. And the Brahmins are supposed to protect truth. Now, all of them do this to some extent through competition. Even the Brahmins have competitions. We read about, especially in Chaitanya Charitamrita, in other more current Shastras, but it's there, not even in the older Shastras, about the debates. So why do the Brahmins engage in debate? Now, of course, some of them ended up being influenced by the suffering mentality and they engaged in debate so they could get their giant lecture and tell everybody they were the big debater. But why did they engage in debate? It was a way of projecting truth. You ever won the debate and became the guru of the other, you have to submit. There was a constant process going on to make sure that truth was protected, that it stayed pure, that it didn't become degraded. And the Kshatriyas also had a competition. Who was the best protector? Who was the most righteous protector? Would win and actually rule the citizens. And the Vaishyas also, the Shudra, were competition. There were means of keeping everything pure. But if you don't have the people in the top circle operating, then things go the other way. Then the Shudras exploit the arts and the skills. The Vaishyas exploit the natural resources, the animals. The Kshatriyas exploit the people, and the Brahmins exploit the truth. This is what's happening. Yes.
I was really startled by Bhagavad-gita's question. He was talking about we put so much emphasis in ISKCON on the Brahmins. And I was thinking, whoa, I don't know which part of ISKCON you've been in. I mean, maybe in Los Angeles they do, but...
In Radhadesh.
In
Radhadesh.
In Radhadesh, maybe, but mostly what I've seen is that I would say the problem is that we don't put emphasis on Brahminical culture in ISKCON. Srila Prabhupada put an emphasis on Brahminical culture. But as you said, there's a reason for it. My Prabhupada explained that the body can live without legs, the body can live without arms, the body can live without a stomach, but we've never seen a body living without a head. And, you know, it's all these other aspects of society would improve tremendously if the Brahminical culture were improving, if our society was actually being guided by knowledge, by Sadhu, Shastra, and Guru.
This is something that I don't want to go on much longer because everybody is hungry, I'm sure. Of course, like in Chapati on Sunday, the class goes till 10. I always want to get a little snacks in their pockets. But I don't want to take up people's prasadam time. But I would like to suggest that these are things that we should be talking about. That our ISKCON society is growing. You know, when I joined ISKCON, we were just a confederation of temples. Pretty much everybody lived either in the ashram or a temple on the house across the street. And I remember my mother saying to me, so you're going on selling books so people move into your temple and buy and sell books so people move into your temple? And what happens when the whole world lives in the temple we're going to sell books to? So, you know, at the time I thought all was critical for me. But, you know, we really do need to think about how to have, we're coming up to ISKCON's 50th anniversary, 2016. So I'd like us to put the S into ISKCON. I think we have developed international Krishna consciousness, but we still need to really develop a society. And to do that, I would suggest that we need to also look at what is our vision. You know, if Mahaprabhu's movement, let's say Mahaprabhu's movement had actually taken over the world, what would his time be? What would our role be? How would we be functioning? As I said, would we be the world government? Would we be the world church? You know, what would we do? And then really start to think of how do we want to develop a society, because all of these things have to be there. Without Brahminical culture, everything's, you can't get anywhere to say without a head. But without Kshatriyas, there's nobody to enforce Brahminical culture. There's nobody to make sure it happens. So the Brahmins give instruction, and the instruction just stays floating in the air. It doesn't go anywhere. You have to have an executive branch that actually institutes the instructions. Then you have to have the branches giving people the wealth to make the execution of the instructions possible. And you have to have people providing the tools for living that make the instructions possible. So, you know, I don't think we want to be floating heads either. You know, there has to be a body to direct. So I don't want to go on now just because they'll want to invite me back in because everybody will be hungry. But I would suggest that these are things that we really should talk about. We shouldn't necessarily assume that everything's already gone right, or we already know exactly how to do it. But how to develop a society? What is the role of ISKCON? What is the identity of ISKCON? How are we meant to become the leaders of society? How are we meant to get an institute model? So thank you very much.